I had the privilege, really, of having a chat with Dave Fishwick. Now, Dave Fishwick is a bit of a phenomenon, really, and his phenomenon is actually documented in a feature film that's out at the moment called The Bank of Dave. I won't bore you with my interpretation because the conversation kind of divulges the purpose of Dave and why it was a joy to speak to the man.
Annie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Fabulous. How are you?
Good. The Bank of Dave, which is the movie that's just out, is all about you, right?
Yes, and it's great fun, and it's been wonderful to be part of it. Very, very surreal.
Yeah, it must be, especially since you're not actually dead.
Yes, exactly, and that's the thing. Normally a biopic, when somebody wants to make a biopic about your life, you're dead, and I'm alive. So it's bonkers.
Now, tell me, what led you, I mean, I know the film tells the story, but I'm really deeply interested in how you got the guts to say to the establishment that you wanted to make a local bank. So tell me about that.
Yes, what happened was, is late 2008, early 2009, my minibus customers, because I sell buses, my minibus customers were coming to me at first and saying, I want to buy that vehicle, and I'd fill the forms in, I'd send it off to the bank, and the bank would pay for the bus for them. And then overnight, that just stopped. The banks just stopped lending to them. And I thought, have these people done something wrong? Have they got a CCJ? Have they not paid a bill? Have they moved house? But you know what, Annie? They'd done nothing wrong. The banks just decided they were no longer going to lend to real people. So I thought, well, perhaps I should lend them the money. They can buy the bus and then pay me back. So that's what I did. I started lending the money, and these people bought the bus and they went and used it on jobs, and they were picking kids up and taking them home at night, and they were doing stag do's and hen parties and things and taking people to the races, and they were paying me back each month. And I'm thinking, it's banking malarkey. It's not that difficult. And then I thought, well, maybe I can help other businesses as well. Maybe I can help other smaller businesses. So then I thought, I'll open a community bank that helps all small businesses in my community. So I went to London, and I went to meet a guy called Andrew Hilton, who was the head of the banking think tank and head of all the bankers. And I said to him, I said, I want to open a little bank. And he said, where are you from? I said, I'm from Burnley. That put him off for starters. And then he said, what have you done in the past? I said, well, I were a builder's labourer and I sell buses. And, oh, no. He said, have you been to Oxford or Cambridge? And I said, you don't get them sorts of opportunities when you come from Burnley. It's a tough place to live. You get a job and you work. And he said, well, what do your mum and dad do? I said, well, my dad was a farm labourer in the morning, and then he went down to the local mill and he did 2 till 10 shift at the local mill as a tackler fixing looms. And I said, my mum was a weaver in the same mill. And he said, no, it'll not work. He said, you've not got the correct parents, you've not been to the correct school, and you're not from the correct place. And I kid you not, that's exactly what he said.
Mm. That's amazing, isn't it? This boys' club, it's a boys' club, you'd probably have to say, has been holding the purse strings in England and probably much further for 150 years, right?
Yes, and this is the crazy thing, because when I ring up to speak to the Bank of England and the regulators and things, bearing in mind there's not been anybody that's applied for a high street bank for over 150 years, they say they're always busy and they can't talk to me. How can they be busy? There's nobody opened one.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Your idea was to have a local bank that lent to local businesses and local people. And you actually found that even when you didn't have the bank, that none of your people reneged on their loans.
No, that's right. Nobody didn't pay. And this is the thing. I wanted to build a community bank called Burnley Savings and Loans. And I wanted to help hardworking people and pensioners get the best rate of interest on the high street, because banks don't pay decent interest. I then wanted to take that money and lend it to people and businesses who couldn't borrow from the high street banks. I then wanted to take the profit from that and pay the overheads and the difference give to local charities. I thought, how difficult can it be? And nobody seemed to want that happen. And when I say nobody, I'm on about regulators, I'm on about the big banks, I'm on about the people that make these decisions. They just didn't want that to happen or to work. And, you know, it really is incredible. And I'll give you an example. Recently, I received a phone call from a school around the corner from the Bank of Dave. And the headmistress rang me and she was really upset. She's saying, look, I really need you to help if you can. The children are coming to school in the morning hungry. The parents can no longer feed them three meals a day. They can only feed them two. So in the morning, they're not getting the breakfast. So she sent me a link to these big industrial toasting machines and equipment for the school kitchen. And I asked her to send me a link to the food she needed. So we've given them the money for a year's supply of food. And I said, 3 months before that runs out, ring us again and we'll give you money for another 12 months supply of food. And we'll continue to do that. And let's get the kids fed. Now, when you've got that, where you've got kids coming to school starving, and on the other hand, you've got I'm on the telly talking to bankers who are telling me, unless they get the $30 million bonuses, they're going to go back to America and never come back. And you just think, how can we have such a diverse section of people in the world where somebody needs $30 million for doing a job, and yet I've got children in Burnley that are starving to death?
Oh, it's just outrageous, isn't it? Can you tell me, you ultimately did get the bank, didn't you?
Well, we got a license to do it now. We're going through the final part of the full-blown big license, which will allow me to take more money from the public. So I'm working with Rishi Sunak, who stood up in Parliament a few weeks ago and used me as an example. He's introduced me to his Treasury Secretary, Mr. Andrew Griffiths, and Andrew Griffiths has now met me, and he's speaking with my lawyers as we speak, and they're trying very hard to get me across the line for the big license. So we're well on the way. But in the meantime, we've lent over 50 million to thousands of people and businesses in the last 12 years.
And so are they using your experience to copy in other areas, other places?
I've offered this to them. That's a really good question. That nobody's asked me that before. I've offered to Andrew Griffiths, the Treasury Secretary, and to Joe Gideon, the MP that's championing this project for the Bank of Dave. I've offered to say, look, once we've got across the line, we will, myself and David H, my right-hand man, David Henshaw, is very, very important in this scenario because he's 55 years in banking experience, the old-fashioned bank manager that knew you, knew where you lived, knew what you were buying. And David's trained all our staff to be exactly the same way as him. And that is so important. But there's a lot of them people around in New Zealand, in Australia. There's a lot of them old bank managers that are semi-retired who would, I'm sure, love to take part in a community project themselves, who know the areas of the community that they're in. But I've offered to the Prime Minister and to the Treasury Secretary, I've said, look, we will gladly hand out all our paperwork and run a pilot scheme for you and then work together to see how it can be replicated in other parts of the country. And I would gladly help people in other parts of the world for exactly the same, because I think it's not just in the UK that there's these problems. Because, I mean, I'm in Australia at the moment, coming to New Zealand tomorrow, and it just seems to be, really, the UK and New Zealand and Australia, we're all, you know, we all speak the same language, and I just think we could work much, much closer together.
This is a revolution, though, because what you're doing is you're saying to the big end of town that, as it says in the film, they make the laws, they make the rules, and so they've weighted the entire system to their needs, but leaving everybody else by the wayside, by the road, and it's really having a really negative effect on people, society.
Yes, and society, I'm a big believer in this. If somebody works really, really hard, then they deserve more than somebody that doesn't want to work hard. However, I also believe very strongly in there needs to be a net for people to fall on, to bounce back up into society and to have an equal chance like everybody else does of being able to work hard and better themselves. So it's really important we level things up in the UK, and I'm absolutely positive that it's the same in other parts of the world. People seem to get left behind in Burnley, especially. Burnley's a really, really tough place to live, and there's a lot of people in poverty. There's a lot of people that use food banks. There's a lot of people who haven't got a job, that's trying really hard to get a job. And you go to London, it's just a completely different world almost. And we just need a fairer system to allow people in other parts of the country and indeed the world to have the same sort of opportunities.
Have you been getting pushback from other parts of the financial sector?
Yeah, well, the financial industry doesn't like me. The big banks don't like me, but I don't care. I quite like that. The payday loan companies don't like me because they prey on the terrible things that they do to the poor and vulnerable. And I don't know if you've heard of the payday loan companies, but they charge 5,000% APR. And I took the industry on and I helped shut the biggest one in England down. In the UK down, and we won a Royal Women's Society Award for that. But I just think there's such a gap of equality in these sorts of places that it's just not fair.
No, it's not fair, and it's dangerous. There's a lot of money in poverty, isn't there?
Yes, and people are... some of the payday loan companies, I mean, I spent 6 months making the series, and I met people that had actually set themselves on fire because they just were so frightened of the debt and the people that were coming after them. You know, I met young people who had run away from home to the other side of the world to get away from the debt collectors. And it's just a horrendous operation of people. And I'm frightened of nothing and no one on the planet. And I went after them and I got the big one shut down. But it needs turbocharging, does that sort of thing, by the governments and the powerful people in the world to stop these people setting up. It always seems to be that the poor end up with the worst end of the stick.
Why is it that the government has... I mean, they would say they're not acting illegally, but there should be laws against them, surely.
Well, I think the people I met, to be honest, Annie, the people I met who were trying to defend the payday loan industry, there was being paid such a lot of money to lobby Parliament and to get the voice heard. And the problem is with the poor and vulnerable, they can't lobby Parliament. They can't get the voice heard. So it takes somebody to stand up and stick up for them. And I met so many that had such a tough time that I dug them out of the poverty that they were in. I met 25 different sets of people and I actually dug them out of the payday loans they were in. But to try and pay the payday loan companies back, it were absolutely incredibly difficult finding these people and giving them the money back because they don't actually want the initial money back. They want to carry on charging the poor forever because that's how they prey on them.
Oh, it's so disgraceful.
It is.
Can you give me some idea of your impression of what's going on in England at the moment? I mean, I know that you're doing something that's making inequality reduced, but what's going on for people in England at the moment?
Well, I think a lot of people are having it tough. I think Rishi is trying to try and level things out as best he can, but he's got a massive, massive task because there's some very, very wealthy people in the UK and they seem to climb up a tree and pull the ladder up and they're frightened of anybody knowing anything or having anything. And it's just so, so wrong. But I started with nothing. I was a build labourer on $50 a week, and I worked really hard for that $50 a week. My dad was a labourer on a farm, and he had two jobs a day, 7 days a week, all his life. I grew up in a house that didn't have an inside toilet. I didn't even know people had a bathroom until I got to 12 years old. You know, I didn't know there were such a thing as toilets in houses, inside a house, because we always had one in the backyard. And I think you've got to grow up understanding things to be able to make a difference later in life because you must never forget where you come from or you can never get to where you're going.
The other thing is that there was a sequence in the film that was really important, which was the young woman who was the doctor who was fighting for a free clinic. But there was mention made of the NHS and how much the NHS is such an important element of English society, but it's been gutted by successive governments and outsourcing. to expensive private companies. That's a very important element in society in England, isn't it, at the moment? Big conversation.
I love the NHS. I think everybody should have access to healthcare. I think everybody in the world should have access to healthcare. Nobody wants to be poorer. Nobody wants to be that person that needs that service. But it's just like fundamental part of life being able to get fixed. And it's fundamentally part of life that you can get food. And children should be fed. Everybody should be fed. People should be allowed, people should be able to turn the electric lights on and the gas on when they need to. And they should be able to go to a hospital and be fixed. Whatever race, colour, doesn't matter. You should have the fundamental of being able to have the healthcare system. And I love doctors, the NHS and the surgeons. What I don't love is these big private companies that make all the money out of it. I think the government, you know, put lots of money into these things. I think the heart's in the right place, but I think they just trust sometimes the wrong people. And I think you give money to these big private companies, huge big operations that most of them aren't even in Britain, and they take so many cuts out of it that by the time it actually gets to the point where it's fixing somebody, it's been diluted so much that we need more. And I think if you get me in the NHS and let me do the buying, because that's what I do for a living, I buy and sell things, I will sit on the board and I will look. So when somebody says this cancer machine is going to be $40 million from America, the first thing I'm going to say is, will they take half? You know, and we'll work his way up from there. Where a lot of these big private companies, they'll just buy them because everybody's going to be on a drink somewhere. When I say a drink, everybody's going to be on a cut, you know, and that worries me. But I love the NHS, and I think, and like I said, I don't actually think it's the government's fault. I think it's actually the private big company operators, and I'm sure that's happening really, and it's happening everywhere. There's so many greed. The greed is the biggest problem.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on here. And you don't get the money, the value for your money when you outsource. The film, The Bank of Dave, did they come to you, or are you just a supreme publicist for yourself and the ideas?
No, what happened was when I started doing the documentary, there were no film, there were no television, there were no nothing. I actually were doing The Bank of Dave because I wanted to do it. It was the television people that turned up on my doorstep and asked if they could film me. And initially, I said no. But once I got into some of the problems that I were receiving from the regulators, I realised I needed the media to protect me as I got into it because I needed a voice. So I then said, agreed to the first documentary 12 years ago. And since then, I've made 10 documentaries, nominated for 3 BAFTAs, Royal Film Society Award and 6 Broadcast Awards. You know, I made a series about job centres. I opened job centres for disadvantaged children and I raised £2 million. It was called Secret Millions. And I went and raised £2 million for pop-up job centres to open for disadvantaged kids. I'm only interested in making programs that are going to make a difference. I get offered to do all sorts of things. I'm just not interested in the slightest. I don't want to go skiing. I don't want to go down a ski slope and complain off the other side. I am not interested in any of it. But when somebody rings me and said, you know, you can take the payday loan industry on, then I'm interested.
Yeah. Well, the film's great. It's a great little, it's just great. And I'm so glad to talk to you. Thank you very much for your work.
You're very welcome, Annie. I hope I get to speak to you again sometime.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
All the best. Bye-bye now.
Yeah, well, what an inspirational fellow. Dave Fishwick, you should go and see the film The Bank of Dave if you want to get a feeling that everything isn't doom and gloom.